We'll finally know later this morning about the unemployment rate in America before the great shutdown of 2013.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. We'll have the global perspective on business and economics in a sec. But first, in about an hour and a half, we'll get the U.S. government's employment report for September. It was supposed to be out nearly 3 weeks ago and on a Friday by tradition. But furloughed Department of Labor statisticians were not allowed to crunch the numbers in a timely fashion. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joins us live. Morning, Mitchell.
Good to be here, David.
So you suppose this data will make a difference coming so late to the econometric dinner?
Well, you know, first of all, it won't tell us anything about the last few weeks, the 800,000 or so government workers who were furloughed and all the rest. That's going to land in the October employment data, which, by the way, will be kind of unreliable, again, because of those statisticians at the Department of Labor who were furloughed. For September, we're expecting about 180,000 new jobs, unemployment holding steady at 7.3%, basically steady as she goes, kind of mediocre as she goes.
Mediocre. And what comes next, though? Just like it seems the stock market shrugged off the whole debt ceiling government shutdown and then rebounded, you think the job market might do the same?
You know, it's not clear. Businesses may hold off on hiring. There's a new debt ceiling deadline early next year. But Bernie Baumol at the Economic Outlook Group says that the business people he talks to are surprisingly upbeat, and they're also kind of jaded.
Business leaders are increasingly tuning out all the gridlock. They're tired of the 11th hour votes that always seem to pull back the U.S. economy from default and economic catastrophe. What they see is really some underlying strength in the U.S. economy.
You know, and so one thing in all this, with the data collection likely to be muddy at least through December, the Fed's likely to hold off on doing more on interest rates and bond buying maybe until early next year.
A key point. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you. Now let's check the numbers. The FT 100 in London is currently up 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures have not moved much this morning. The International Labour Organization and the government of Bangladesh today are launching a campaign to improve working conditions at clothing factories there. It'll use money from British and Dutch governments to boost workers' rights and make factories safer about 6 months after a factory collapsed, killing 1,100 people. The BBC's Mahfuz Sadiq in Dhaka tells us there's also a movement on wages for Bangladeshi workers.
One of the major demands by workers has been a higher minimum wage for the garment workers. And in the last month or so, there's been protests here on the ground by workers demanding a higher minimum wage. There is a government-appointed minimum wage board, which is supposed to announce its findings and propose a new minimum wage in consultation with the workers, the manufacturers, and other quarters. That decision was supposed to come this week, and now it's been pushed back to Sunday next week. So that's being eagerly watched.
Bangladesh is second only to China in the production of finished clothing for export.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Looking to train for the job of the future? Well, get a box of those heat packs you stick in your boots and head north of the 60-degree parallel. You may prefer your Arctic pristine, but melting ice from climate change, coupled with ships equipped with new ice-breaking technology, could spark a new era of commerce in the far north. But shipping in Arctic waters takes special skills. Scott Hamilton is department head for the Alaska Maritime Training Center at Alaska's Institute of Technology. Morning, Captain.
Good morning, David. How are you today?
Good. Why do you think the time has come for more people to know how to navigate in the Arctic?
If you look at where Alaska is situated, we are at a choke point. Tourism, fisheries, oil and gas. Right now in Alaska, fishing is a $2 billion a year industry. And the cruise ship industry in the Arctic has doubled from 2004 to 2007. I refer to it as the manifest destiny of the opening of the Arctic.
But just to explain, I mean, you couldn't get a ship through a lot of it until recently, or soon you'll be able to, because not as much ice.
That's true. But also, I like to point out the fact that even though there are periods of year where we have ice-free waters, technologies are there to operate in the ice. And so, yes, the reduction of ice is a discussion that people like to argue politically, but the fact of the matter is technologies are there with nuclear-powered icebreakers, with ice-class hulls, with satellite navigation. All these advances have made whether there's ice there or not almost a moot point.
So give me a sense of just some of the skills I would need there compared to navigating, say, off Bermuda where things are warmer.
Well, just getting dressed in the morning when it's 40 below, you're not going to walk out in a utility kilt and flip-flops. Some of the firefighting and cargo operations are going to be fundamentally different. Engineering concerns for hydraulics and winches and cranes are just fundamentally different once things freeze.
Now, I can't do this interview without asking you about the simulator.
Basically, it's a ship in a box in a building. Officers are now required to have specific certifications for training. One of the big ones since the Exxon Valdez is bridge resource management. It's who does what job in the bridge, identifying what's called the error chain. And these are all things that are best done in the safety of a ship simulator prior to being able to get underway.
Captain Scott Hamilton at the Alaska Maritime Training Center at Alaska's Institute of Technology. Captain, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And could there be a seamy tale of skullduggery and corruption involving the innocent little kiwi? A third of the kiwi fruit in the world comes from, of course, New Zealand, and most of those via a cooperative there called Zespri. Now there's word that the anti-fraud office in Auckland is looking into something potentially bad at Zespri. The growers' co-op told the Wall Street Journal it hasn't been contacted by authorities, and they don't know the scope of the investigation. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.